When our Lord created man and woman, he built into them a particular structure. That is, they're just designed differently. They're physically different, they're psychologically different. This is something that's coming out quite a bit in brain studies that they're finding that men and women are very different in how the brain processes certain things. It's not modern science, it's not everybody that, you know, only modern culture can be a focus study to tell us something that everybody knows by common sense that men and women are different. But that difference, you know, is identifying. You know, there's 3 billion men and 3 billion women on this planet. For some reason or another, there's very few that seem to understand each other. But I think the emergence has to do with the fact that most people don't recognize that there is a natural structure God designed women to function a certain way and men to function a certain way. Every time he designs something to perform a particular kind of function, something acts contrary to that function, it doesn't work well. And this is quite a thing for us to recognize that men and women cannot be happy if they act contrary to their masculine or feminine nature. It simply is not possible. And this is a very key and important point. The modern psychological circle some time ago, of course, that's all shifting now. And the parents used to basically say there's no difference between men and women, which is how culture has raised them. But we know that's not true. That they're actually designed differently. They just simply function differently. Now, that structure God built in is noble. And it's, even though men and women don't seem to understand each other very well, God did reveal a great deal about men and women to us in the creation account. That's what I'm going to focus on in this first conference, is God's creation of men and women in the creation account of Adam and Eve. Of course, Adam is created, and we read in Genesis 2:8, and the Lord said, it is not good for man to be alone, let's make a helper like unto himself. The great biblical scholar Cornelius Agrippa makes the observation that Eve is a helper, not a corrier, in Latin, to which she helps Adam. That's why she was created to help him. And he says there's different ways in which that's done. This is one of the ways that Eve helps Adam by the propagation and education of children. Adam simply cannot have children without Eve. So it's something that's quite important for man wants to have children, he's got to be married. Two, Eve is also an aid as to the governance of the family. This becomes really clear when we start getting larger families. You know, it's not possible for one parent to keep track of 8, 9, 10 kids. And so it's good to have the two parents to be able to keep them in line. And also to help govern the family just within the home. The governance here indicates, well, governance indicates a kind of ordering, that the woman actually becomes the husband, the wife helps the husband to create order within the family. The woman is also an aid by virtue of the fact that she alleviates other necessities of life. It is not possible for a man to provide for his family and still always maintain the domestic affairs of the household. In other words, Adam can't do it all, but St. Paul says he's still responsible for it. What does that mean? Well, it basically means this, that Eve is a helper, not the head of the family. And if she tries to take headship, it's like somebody trying to usurp the role of the boss at work. So it's actually called a sin of usurpation, in which a person tries to steal someone else's authority.
But that doesn't mean that Adam doesn't have certain obligations in relationship to her, but somehow or another she's hired help. It means this, ultimately. St. Thomas Aquinas makes the observation that ultimately Adam's responsible for absolutely everything in the family. Everything. That means whether, because this is quite important, especially among traditional men. A lot of traditional men figure these roles of separation is so absolute and so profound that he never has to change the diaper, never has to do the dishes, never has to help clean up or do any of it. Well, guess what? Changing the diaper, making sure the dishes are done, whether it's you or someone else, all that is ultimately your responsibility as a man, not your wife's. It's ultimately your responsibility. Every single thing in the household is your responsibility to make sure it's done. If your wife isn't capable of doing it, guess whose responsibility it is? It's yours. That being said, there's a thing called natural delegation. Nature delegates to women, that is, just by the very nature that God structured into feminine nature, they're just better at certain things than men. And you can kind of see this. My experience is, with rare exception, women are just better at cleaning things than men. Men are just a lot sloppier, and that type of thing. But the point is that this God created women in such a way that he intended for them to perform certain domestic functions, and as a result, this natural delegation means that she normally takes care of this stuff. That natural delegation is the foundation for the differences in the roles in men and women, at least within the context of the family and the affairs of running the family. It's a natural delegation. God normally, in other words, normally women should take care of these things, unless there's a sufficient reason to the contrary, like the husband recognizes that she just can't seem to, you know, every time she washes dishes, I'm getting debris on my moles or something, you know, that type of thing. But the point is that normally those things are left to the woman. But, again, because he's responsible, doesn't matter that there's natural delegation, but because he's responsible, it's his place to make sure it's done. If she's not capable of doing it, and it can be a variety of different reasons. But one of the reasons very often that you see as to why she can't do it is there's just a lot of kids. There's, you know, there's a lot of work to be done. You get these guys that go to work 8 to 5. Granted, it's difficult work, and it's hard. They'll come home, and they expect to sit in front of the TV for 4 hours at night and have the wife wait on them while she has been taking care of 5 or 6 kids all day long. That's called ill use. It's sinful. Now, what does this mean? It means, hey, it's your responsibility. If she can't get to the dishes, get off the couch and go take care of it. But on the other hand, you can also get the kind of thing going on with women where they don't really want to be the helper. One of the things recently we've seen, they either want to be in charge, or, which means they don't want to be the help, they want to be the one in charge. Or you end up with this scenario now where the big thing is with these women that are that a lot of women basically want, they don't want to go to work, which I don't think women should work anyway. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But they, unless it's necessary, but what they'll do is they don't want to work, but they don't want to take care of the home either. I'm like, well, what are you doing with your time all day? I mean, it's one of those things where they don't even want the normal things that are delegated to them by God. This is important. Women are just designed to do certain things a lot more easily and a lot better than men. Not that men can't do it, and a lot of things that men do that women can't do, but the issue is what did God intend by the structure that he built into them, which gives them that structure, gives them an ease. It gives them an ease of being able to actually do these things well and quickly. We read in Genesis 2:19, and the Lord had formed the ground all the beasts of the earth. So then God creates a number of different animals, brings them to Adam, and then Adam recognizes, look, these just aren't like me. And why? Because they didn't have the use of reason. So the fact that Adam names all the living creatures indicates his authority over them, for it pertains to authority to name a thing. However, Adam does not find any mere animal that is like unto himself, and this indicates that none of the animals were created, all the animals that were created were below his nature. They were below him in a certain sense. Here, the scriptures are setting up a specific difference between the creation of Eve and the creation of the animals, indicating her essence of nature and the essence of Adam. So what does this mean? It means that Adam and Eve end up having the same nature. He recognizes these animals aren't the same as me. Now that's an important point. Because sometimes you get guys treating their wives like cattle. And I'm not exaggerating. Especially in the traditional movement, it's really bad. Guys will treat their wives like complete trash, demeaning them, saying nasty things to them, and expecting all the while their adoration. It's ludicrous. It's not the way people are designed even psychologically, particularly women. And then, of course, he treats her like trash and wonders why she doesn't want to render the marital debt. Like, whoa, you know. But the point is that women have the same nature. Even though feminine nature, that is what we call in metaphysics the accident of feminine nature, is below masculine nature, and there's a whole set of reasons behind that. Nevertheless, on the order of nature, she's the same. This means that she has the same rights as to the natural rights as a man does. She has a right to justice. But so does Adam. Because sometimes you get women who think they're better. In fact, you're starting to see that in our culture where everyone presumes, everyone acts like women are just better than men in every conceivable fashion. Part of that has to do with the fact that emotions have been elevated above reason in our culture, and so as a result, well, who are more capable of the emotional life? That's Eve. That is women. So the Lord took, he built the rib, he took the rib from Adam, and then he closed it up, and then from that he created Eve. And then Scripture tells us he brought her to Adam. Now that's a key line. What does this mean when he brings her to Adam? He didn't bring Adam to her. It's the other way around. And that means that God designed it to men and women two things that are complementary. The first is for Adam to look to judge Eve's suitability to him and her goodness. The second, so in other words, it's his place to judge his wife. Second, he put in Eve natural inclinations to want to have the proper appearance to be approved. This is really important. This is why it's appropriate for women to dress up, be more concerned about their appearance. It's a proper thing for a woman. As long as it doesn't go to excess, it can actually be in accord with the virtue of modesty. Whereas when you get the guy standing in front of the mirror and he's putting on makeup and wearing earrings, Houston, we have a problem. The fact of the matter is that God did not design men to be the fairer sex. Now, the fact that guys are walking around piercing their ears and things like that just so that they can look pretty is inherently unmasculine. It's inherently unmasculine. Why? Well, it's obvious. Because a man should be able to stand on his virtue. It's his virtue that should really attract a woman, not the way he looks. Whereas men are designed a little bit differently when they're looking at women. The first thing that a guy first notices usually is a woman's physical appearance. And then from that, he can extrapolate, you know, by experience being around her, whether she has sufficient virtue to be a good wife. This is why I've said from the pulpit before, I don't care how good looking your wife, or how good looking a woman is. If she is not virtuous, you will pay for it the rest of your life. I don't care how ugly she is. If she is a virtuous woman, I mean, even if you got to put lamb chops around her neck to make her attractive in some fashion. If she is a woman of virtue, you will be happy the rest of your life. Now the problem is, because after the fall, this whole thing of men judging women, instead of judging their virtue, which is the higher thing, they judge women based upon their suitability to them, based on how beautiful they are. Not a good idea. But this also means that it's designed into women.
It's working now. Which is why when you go to her and drink her on trash, she will go cold and angry. Why? Because when we don't find proper fulfillment in something we desire, we either become sad, or because of the perception of an injury, we become angry. This is very important. I tell guys, if you don't show proper affection to your wife, deference, and concern, and respect, and then when she gets to be, you know, 60 years of age and she's angry and can't stand you, you only have yourself to blame. It's a failure to understand how to function. This also means that women are the fairer sex. I mean, they're just simply more beautiful. If you take the objective conditions for beauty, women just simply are more beautiful than men. They're more proportionate, because they're more rounded, more proportionate, there's more symmetry, etc. Then we read in Genesis, goes on, Adam said, this now is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman because she was taken out of man. So Adam recognized that she's different from everything else.
When we'll talk about this a little later, but it means that in relationship to men of marital act of women or passive, generally speaking, in the relationship. And this will have a key point in relationship to the virtue of love, we'll talk about it a little later. But they have the same essence. He says, this is something worthy of me. And there's nothing like it. There's nothing like her. He immediately recognized she had the same nature. Then scripture goes on and says, wherefore a man shall leave his father and mother, and cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. This is obviously a reference to marriage. But he continued that line is already in the past essential aspects of marriage. Monogamy. He didn't say, shall cleave to his wives, to his wife. That's why our culture, people in our culture call polygamy, that's really bad. Well, all we have is called serial polygamy. You just get divorced and married. It's serial polygamy, it's no difference. Rather than all at the same time. Second of all, cleave means inseparable. And it also means the viability of one, just become one flesh, which is inviolable. It has to be fidelity, exclusivity, things of that sort, relationship to marriage. Then there's the fall. Okay, so God set this up to where men and women actually have this particular kind of relationship to each other. That natural inclinations to want to be married, to be treated properly within the context of marriage, to be treated respectfully, to be treated with dignity. You can get away from it. You know, one of the very little secrets is that 25% of all domestic abuse cases are women being on that. Not everybody. It's not 25 at all. But it's two, as I mentioned, when women become frustrated, they become angry. When women become frustrated, there's a problem that arises. And that is they try and control their husbands. Now, what this basically means is that they try and control them because they're not getting out of family. Now, I'm not saying, I've said this before, I always tell men, you never, ever, ever give your wife what she wants. Ever. You always give her what you know will make her happy. Sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're not. And that's a very important point. A guy can't, it's a good thing to want to please your wife. It's a good thing. You should try to please your wife. But you please your wife because it's incongruity with what will make her happy. Too many times guys just hate their wives. Adam meets the apple. So what ends up happening? He condemns his daughters, and in some sort of degree, his daughters, to every form of atrocity, rape, molestation, abuse, and suffering. By conceding and giving in to Eve, he ends up condemning her in a certain sense to or at least his daughter, I should say, to a life of war. Now, not that everybody's life, that everyone's life is miserable, but the point of fact, he basically opens them up to lack protection. So when Adam fails to protect his daughters and his sons because he ate the apple, in the end, you end up with all sorts of problems because he doesn't do this. When Adam eats the apple, he abdicates his responsibility to take care of his offspring because he foresees what men and women designed for. He knew this, he had infused knowledge. And as a result, he failed in one of the fundamental aspects of being a man to provide and to protect. It was an act of effeminacy. St. Thomas Aquinas defines effeminacy as an unwillingness to put aside the pleasure to pursue something arduous and difficult. Adam should have said, leave your own room when he should present the apple. But instead, he placated her. It was a mistake. The pleasure fits the crime. So what's this mean? St. Thomas makes the observation, that's what we've got to talk about, the punishment fits the crime. Because that's really the problems in marriage today, is that the punishment arises from original sin that respected to each individual gender rear them in the heads of people who can't get along. In most cases, not at all, but in most cases. St. Thomas basically on the fall of the church says there's three states of women. has judgment for his approval. But St. Thomas says that in his ordination, Adam always looked out for Eve's good. He always looked out for it. He wasn't selfish, he wasn't obnoxious, he always treated her with love, kindness, etc. That was the status of ordination. That was the original order. That's what God had originally intended. Eve hands the apple to Adam. First of all, she put an end to usurpation. She assumed that it was okay for her to pursue a form of knowledge contrary to divine fault. That is, divine worship. God said, don't do this. Well, she did that as a place of man to make determinations of those kinds, and she did on her own. Which is one of the reasons why Americans allow that when they just go off and start spending money on contrary wisdom for husband or something of that sort, and then they wonder why there's the difficulties in marriage. It just goes downhill. If a woman is not supporting her husband, do not expect your children to be following and be obedient to you or your husband. It ain't gonna happen. But so, okay, so what does this mean? When Adam ate the apple, St. Thomas says that women entered into a state of subjection. And the state of subjection is that he no longer looks out for her well-being, because the effects of original sin are such that he becomes selfish, self-centered, and only really interested in his own pleasure. Now we'll see what the remedy is for that later, St. Paul has this. But the point is that now he is going to suffer. Try to control Adam, try to get Adam what you want. Guess what? Adam's not going to pay any attention to you. He's not going to do what you want him to do. He's not going to take care of you. You try to control him, guess what? Now he's going to be worried. He's going to be concerned about himself. So why don't you get the problem? And this is what very often we see in marriages. Guys are selfish. But so do women. Women are also selfish. But their problems were a little bit different. We read in Genesis 3:1, the third state, by the way, St. Thomas says, is that in heaven women are neither in a state of subjection nor in a state of subordination, because some women rule in heaven. So the issue is not whether a woman is in the head of the household, she wants this or she wants to go out and make a career, be a big CEO, that's all irrelevant ultimately. In the end, the real question is, does she fulfill her duties before God? Because then she'll actually possibly be above her heaven, or husband in heaven, which I'm sure happens rarely, because more women have a great disposition towards the virtue of piety in men. And this is something that's entirely possible, and who knows, we don't know these things, but a lot of women, probably more than most men. Now, the serpent was more subtle than any of the beasts of the earth, which our Lord had made, and he said to the woman, why have I commanded you, you should not eat of every tree of paradise? Lockheed observes that Adam was given the command not to eat the apple before Eve was created. In other words, Adam placed the tower, don't eat the apple. Because she was in a state of formation, she was supposed to follow what Adam said. But instead, she usurped his authority, ate the apple, didn't consult him, and then she hands it to him and says, here, do it, Adam, basically. She hands it to him, which is her ability to try to basically take control of the situation. And so as a result, women from the time of Adam and Eve will always be fighting that inclination to want to control and manipulate their husband. Let me tell you, look at it. If a woman is subordinate to her husband, if he's a man of Adam and virtue, she can get anything out of him she wants. Because all she's got to do is be kind, fix her meal, which she knows he really likes, and love on a little bit, and say, you know, would you please do this? And most guys will say, okay. But when she starts to become controlling and that type of thing, all it needs to do is he's going to get everything she wants. And the woman said that the tree was good to eat and fair to the eyes. The woman saw that the tree was good to eat and fair to the eyes and delightful to behold. And she took the fruit thereof and did eat and gave her husband, who did eat. Now, what this basically means is that Eve committed five sins in eating the apple. The first is pride, thinking that she was above what she actually was. She served
acknowledged that she suffered from impatience and indignation of soul, by which she was indignant to be constrained by her precepts, and to be worn off by the humility of the fruit.
No, this is good.
But why is this being denied? It's basically it. And also she suffered from curiosity. That is, elation in heart when seeing the fruit. What's that mean? Well, it basically means that she looked at the fruit and it was intellectually alluring. I have knowledge that I don't have now. Human beings have a natural inclination to want to know. We get a certain pleasure out of knowing things. But there's certain knowledge that we should not have. It's not obvious to us in our state. One time, as a demonstrator, one time I was at a friend's house, he was saying, knowledge is always good. It is always good to know things. I said, really? His wife was saying, I said, is it good that you have a moral knowledge of the woman next door? Well, they shut that down. There's certain knowledge that is not proper to us. We should not seek it. Then, St. Thomas says that she committed gluttony. Or no, obviously she committed gluttony. It's based on the why? Because she ate something she wasn't supposed to. She was supposed to abstain from it. And as a result of that, concupiscence arose. That is, desire and intemperance and that type of thing. Then, of course, there's perfect disobedience and transgression of precept by the real passion, eating of the fruit. Observe that each of these have a punishment, which affect the relationship in marriage. That's a positive effect of fact. Women suffer from pride a lot of times. Also, they're impatient and indignant. They don't get what they want. Women tend to be more curious. That's why they tend to gossip more than men, generally. And they have a certain kind of concupiscence. In other words, they want certain things. You see this, actually, when it says that he looked at the fruit and saw that it was good. And I thought, like, that's why I didn't even go to the store and spend hours looking at stuff. Whereas a guy, he's like, I'm just going to get this out, get out of here. Unless it's something that he happens to like, if he's, you know, making computer gadgets, I think he can look at that stuff for hours. But that also creates a kind of effeminacy, right? Because technology gives us a certain pleasure in its use, but we don't have a certain temperance in that. You make guys effeminate, always nervous, then you go around and get into the game, great. But with guys who constantly have to work, constantly manage their own, they will spend hours. And you see this, guys come home from work, they'll spend hours in front of a computer. Meanwhile, guys are running around trying to do all the work. Eve deceives Adam by giving in to the apple. In other words, this is why, in other words, she hands it to him. She eats it and she hands it to him. The kind of form of deception is good. No, it's not. This is why women are having more prone to deception. Other men can be deceived in mind and that type of thing. You know, most of their liars, I say. But the fact is that women are more likely to lie officiously. That we need in order to gain something. But then Cornelius Lodge goes on to observe, again based on the fathers, that Adam appeared to the elation of pride, desiring omniscience, he wanted all the forms of knowledge, consents to his wife and eats the forbidden fruit. This means that men ought not follow the concupiscence of their wives. Again, you don't give her what you want. She wants. You give her what you know will make her happy. That doesn't mean it's from time to time it's not going to be difficult because, you know, most human beings are stubborn. They don't get what they want, they get conscious. It doesn't matter about the inch being happier. It's so beautiful. Adam, however, committed 8 sins in the fall. The first is pride. Just like Eve, he thought himself above precepts. Of God, that you stand in judgment of your meaning. The next is he had excessive love in pleasing his wife, as we've been talking a little bit about. This is really important. Because a lot of guys give their wife what they want because of their own intemperance. It's true. The nature of a man's love is such that they take joy in each other's pleasure and delight. It's a good thing. But if it's not moderated, as it's not so oriented to peace and virtue, it will wreak havoc in the marriage eventually. Because the guy was always committed to his wife, and more chill was always given to him, and so you end up with these problems.
Curiosity, again, want of knowledge. Incredulity. The father saw us that Adam thought that God was only, and he kind of just said, well, maybe God was only speaking figuratively or really, but not absolutely certain about the law being the apple. In other words, don't eat this, you're going to die. Maybe he wasn't really saying I was going to die. In the sin of presumption, as if violation of law would only be a venial sin or a light sin. This was going to be a big deal. But I was going to get something in return. Which is one reason I find that in confession, men are more likely to commit the sin of presumption than women, usually. Then there's, of course, the gluttony, because he ate something that's supposed to violate the virtue of abstinence. And then there's disobedience, disobeying the law. Now, this disobedience of Adam and Eve meant that they become self-willed and self-centered. This was the inherent path of selfishness on the side of Adam and Eve. That meant when they came to marriage, they were going to forever fight selfishness in different ways usually. They were going to fight in relation to each other. Now, there is a way to get around that. Again, we'll talk about that a little bit later. St. Paul has a solution. Then he gave excuses for his sin. That was the eighth sin. In other words, he didn't take responsibility. Feminism. If you're a man, you've been taking the chops and you've done something stupid. You know, I have a particular location. I mean, it's changed now because the news media has broken it so significantly. And why are you when I grew up? If you did something stupid, and this has gotten me in trouble as a priest, because people think you're stupid, my natural inclination is, hey, you're stupid, don't do that. But that's stupid. But it meant though that as a man, if someone came up to you and said, look, what you're doing is wrong or stupid, you looked at it, you didn't take it personally, that's offensive. Because my feelings were hurt. Didn't get afraid. Rather is, you look at objection and say, you're right or you're wrong. Then you went on. The problem is that men are becoming more and more and more and more and more offended today. Why? Because their life is inundated with pleasure from the beginning. Parents don't deny them anything, they're constantly feeding them. There's no sense in which they can't be told no. They spend large amounts of time in front of TV, which gives them an intellectual amount of pleasure. They spend a lot of time playing video games, which gives them pleasure. They do this day in and day out. They don't have to be hard work. They have responsibility. Then they get to be 18 years of age, and they wonder why nobody wants to marry them. Well, you're not responsible. You have no sense of self-denial because you just spend on picture. They're constantly feeding this appetite for pleasure. In the end times, men will become lovers of pleasure. This is a serious problem, because this is one of the reasons, again, when I was studying with concern at St. Peter's, a seminarian, my dad said, well, you know, the real problem with the priesthood today is there's no more men left in the priesthood. You know, it's hard to find guys with no men. What does it mean to be a real man? Well, it means to put aside your pleasure. We'll see what that means in the comments a little bit later, because it is the thing that 99% of men do not do. Just put the pleasure aside. The unfortunate thing is that it's also why men are so unhappy today. They're not men, so they're unhappy. Not by men, I don't mean they're not beating each other up and things like that. That also is very often a sign of effeminacy. Why? Because men are more, because of it, they're more designed for operation to be rational out. That's what makes them angry. Because of that, again, that's where they can fly in wars and things like that, because these are hard and difficult. So as a result, they get a certain pleasure of beating each other's brains out. And that's a sign of, you know, to keep these guys off the map right now. It's also the same thing about chastity. This is a serious problem, especially with the internet, and this has been probably so readily available, because it's just destroying masculinity. Because what's happening is guys become so wed to pleasure
capable of interior self-discipline and self-control. This is one of the reasons why the modern priesthood has to be nervous. Because ultimately, self-deceit is an inherently manly thing. Why? Because it requires an enormous amount of self-denial, not just in relationship to the conjugal act, but to all of its marriage. The intimacy, the company, the common life, the children, require a tremendous amount of self-denial. When the priest stands at the altar, he says, "Hoc est meum corpus meum." This is my body. Now, he's repeating the words of Christ, but when all that is being said is that he himself is placing himself upon the altar to be victimized and to be and to suffer. This is why so few go and do it in the priesthood. And when they do go into the priesthood, they just want an easy life. This is not the nature of it. You're not going to be a victim. You're not going to sacrifice yourself. Don't become a priest. And when the elements of sacrifice collapse in the church, because the church is not there, don't expect a bunch of manly men to step forward, the types of guys who sacrifice themselves for others' good, in which they get nothing in return in this life. But all this property and all this lack of self, you get these guys who say, "Oh, yeah, I spent 6 minutes last night." You know, you're not this far from the type of people that end up with problems in relationships, the sins that are proper to San Francisco. And by that, I mean the fact that pleasure is your goal. How is that manly? Manly is self-denial. And a woman has to have a blessing to be able to do that. How is she going to do that? See what we're here. Then there is a certain thing that ends up happening. Our own conscious happening. Your desire to be your husband. But this desire actually depends if you look at the Latin, if you look at the Hebrew. If you look at the Latin actually means that women had the desire of men. And so there's actually women have a stronger inclination towards marriage than men. This is one reason why men can be single, but most of the Latin doesn't bother them as much as it does women. But then it also says your desire should be for a husband. In Hebrew, it has a totally different connotation. It implies that you will, in a certain sense, and I use this term broadly, not strictly, you will kind of like give the spell of your husband. In other words, you really want to be with you, really want to be around you, you really don't want to be separated from it, that kind of thing. So that it said that not only will he be over you, dominate you because of the fall, but you will find not just physically and in the externals, but even interiorly, if he doesn't give you what you want, he will crush you. The head of the household fails, and raves with those under him. And so they exhibit the same kind of advice. Now, what does this mean? You should be under his power, and desire should be for your husband. This really, it really basically means that you'll want your husband around, and you'll want him in charge of things if you're truly virtuous, but it also means that he's not going to suffer. It also means because your desire should be for your husband, the woman is more capable of being wounded emotionally. I cannot tell you how wounded women are today. I deal with it all the time. And it's because of the fact that when men are only after their own pleasure, they are not going to look out for the good of women, they will simply victimize them and treat them like trash. Women are softer and gentler, which means they're also more capable of being wounded. Women are also going to be more inclined to have children than men. Men don't really desire to have children, but they're going to be more inclined. But it also means that women will view human beings as whole individuals, with a whole content, emotional content, personality, and that sort of thing. Whereas men don't do that. They look at women as parts. You know, does she have the right kind of figure? Does she have this kind of thing? Meanwhile, not paying any attention to the integral part of her personality. their relationships to the Lord, how they relate to the Lord. The women's virtues are that they have a greater capacity to help people be healed, and they have a certain appearance that men don't have. Now, a lot of that, I mean, I think actually is going around, you know, exhibiting tenderness and all that kind of thing, because that can also be a sign of effeminacy. But at the same time, when a man is incapable of it, that is not virtue. Women are more inclined to talk for the sake of educating children. Adam is secure. Now you're being secure. In other words, we know this from great studies. Women get 10 times the amount of pleasure out of talking to men. Now, people think, they look down on them for that. What is my perfection? If women didn't have a stronger inclination to talk, kids would be dumb and stupid. They have to want to talk. Now, here's the thing. The talking is geared towards the children, not your husband. So the guy comes home, he's absolutely exhausted for 16 hours. I think I just talked. On the other hand, men have to recognize that because women have these natural inclinations, in order for the wife to be happy, he has to give her due. He has to be sisters of her. He has to tend her, which is his duty. And that means that you have to listen to her, and take concern and care of her, and not listen to what she actually has to say. But most guys have been married for a few years, become tongue deaf, and tell her wife's voice, and they don't hear anything anyway. They're sitting in front of television, you know, flipping through the channels and shaking. Women are more likely to want to rely on piety, which affects society. Children are going to learn the submission to authority by watching their mother. When a wife is not submissive, it subverts the moral order and immorality is applied on the mother. It's called the feminist movement. Now, the feminist movement is extremely damaging. I mentioned this in the last conference that I was here. If a woman sits outside the authority of her husband, this is the divine economy of authority that God sets up. If you stay within the economy of authority, you'll be protected. Because the order of God will protect you. But the minute you step outside of that, you're just going to be victimized by demons. And that's actually what ends up happening. Women who refuse to be subordinate to her husband step out from underneath that authority structure, which is designed to provide and protect her, not just physically, but spiritually, she will become a victim of divine influence. It's not necessarily a extreme or extraordinary, which is said, but she's going to have an extremely difficult time showing her interior life. Women were not designed for her. How do we do this? Well, just look at her. I said this from the pulpit when I was in Kansas City one time, and it's true. I have never met a single woman, not one, was ever happy when she worked outside the home. Now, she might be emotionally fulfilled, she might be some kind of emotional satisfaction. That's an entirely different thing than being happy. Because they weren't designed for it. They weren't designed for the psychological rigors. And God makes our nature is capable of focusing on a single task and treating everything out. Women can't do that. Women were designed for children. When you've got six kids, you can't be focusing on one kid. When you've got them, that's what God does. He's changing the diaper and all other kids to feed each other bloody. And he's designed. But that is necessary for men. He has to be able to know this in order to do his task at war. That's the thing they learned in the First Gulf War. The women could not handle everything flying around them. The bullets, shrapnel, and they couldn't deal with it because they're not designed for that. The design can track a number of different things superficially, but the design is designed to really focus deep on one thing to make everything else. And that means that women were designed for. It's also one of the reasons why there's only like one firefighter in the entire U.S. Military is a woman. Why? Because the amount of focus that's required is only about what women are naturally capable of. Rather, they're more designed to be able to track a number of different things at once. And this is why women are usually more happy with their money, because it fits who and what they are. You know, you can't violate nature and be happy. It just simply is not possible. So then they get the respect of the parishioners.
Okay, so Eve is told, well, guess what, it's going to pour it over you, it's going to make your life miserable, etc. And she answers in the state's rejection. But then what do you say to them? Guess what, I'm going to support her. So here's the apple, how you find that the world will be stingy in its fruits, and it's going to be hard. That's one of the problems of modern culture. The fact that it has become so soft, so easy to produce something, because we've become so masterful at manipulating reality, physical reality. As a result of that, we've become kind of soft. So I talk about asking one major boys and men. There's two ways: pain and responsibility. Now, pain, I don't mean to eat them. Is that they have to do things that are hard, physically and mentally. But then the other thing is they have to be responsible, come in charge of someone and say, okay, this is done. If they don't do it, well, then you punish them. So that they learn a sense of responsibility. Then when they get to the age, they'll be responsible. And because they're able to do things that are hard, they can put them how they feel aside and to provide for life. You want to make a man who's capable of being married, that's the only way. We're going to take a 15-minute break, and then we'll come back for a conference on men. The conference is originally, actually, maybe we should separate the men and women, but I think it would be better, well, it's up to people if they want to attend the conference, but I do, women can also attend the conference for that. That would be a whole speaking time. And vice versa, by the way. So, okay, so we'll return in 15 minutes.